Welcome to the Interesting Football Podcast. My name's Laurie Knox and I'm joined by former junior Jill Simon Day as we decide whether Watford are the most interesting team in the English Premier League. Simon Day, how are you and what are your first thoughts when you hear the name Watford?
I'm good. I'm excited about this. I've just said to you before we started recording, I think Watford have got some, have got a chance. I think there's some pretty exciting facts about them.
Outsiders, the Andy Ruiz Jr. of the Interesting Football Podcast.
That's quite good. Yeah. I feel like throughout the Premier League, we should have kept up the boxer analogies. We've only done it for three. Like Andy Ruiz Jr. I quite like Watford. I've been three or four times. It's a nice sort of... I like a football club where it's sort of... That's the town. It's like Burnley. It's sort of... It's a fairly small town and it's got a football team. And you don't get that much up in the higher leagues, do you? You get a city like Leeds or Leicester that's got a big club in, or a place that's got multiple clubs in, but just a nice football club.
Well, there's an interesting topic. Is it better to be from a... Because, you know, I always think, you know, Sheffield, you've got the rivalry, it's great. But then I think, you know, a little bit jealous of places like Newcastle and Leeds, where I almost feel like, is it like an international when your team's in a big game? Everyone in the city's there behind the same team. I know, which one's better? One club cities or two club cities?
One. For me, I just think you've got everyone behind the same team. There's a bit more, I hate this word used in football context, but like community spirit around it.
Right.
I like that. And you don't get that much in the top divisions, do you? Because everywhere's big, or you know what I mean? Everywhere's sort of a big city or what.
Right. I'd say Leicester, Newcastle, is that it in the Prem? And well, Leeds. Watford, if you, I always think, yeah, Leeds, of course. Yeah, I always think of Watford as being, I know it's kind of fake London, really, isn't it?
Well, do they count in questions about London clubs?
Oh, I think
they are the very last on the tube, aren't they?
Are they inside the M25? That's it for me.
Half.
Yeah, I think they are. Which, if they are, yeah, for me, M25. I'm a simple man. If it's in the M25, it's London.
Okay.
There we go. Right. I say this as I sit about a mile outside the M25, but there we go. Okay. So, for Watford, yeah, I've been there once, I think. And yeah, I know it's just a nice classic ground, old ground. You've got four unique stands. You sit behind the goal, I think, shift you off to the side. Is that still the case?
Whenever I've been behind the goal. And it's quite a big, steep stand to get behind the goal.
Right.
And I like that. For a club like Gillingham, it was A, local, and B, quite a big game for Gillingham when we're in the same division as Watford. Because they have sort of been down to League One and the Championship, obviously. Down to them a few times. It was quite a big game. It was always a good atmosphere. I've just got quite nice memories of it. A couple of times.
It really annoys me when clubs just shift fans right into the kind of side stand in that corner. I don't know, just give them behind the goal. Let's get a good atmosphere going. You know, okay, I know you might think we're giving something up here, but it just creates a good atmosphere, right? That kind of like, you know, your best fans are behind one goal, their best fans are behind the other. And I don't know, it's a good way to do it.
I don't mind if you're at the side by the halfway line, I'm all right with that. But when you're like stuffed, that's just... Yeah.
Indeed.
Low down in the corner is the worst place to watch football from.
Well, Mr. Day, yes, agreed. Mr. Day, can you give us fact one? Because I basically just want to get this out of the way so we can do the best quiz of all time.
Fact number one is, in the 1997 to 1998 season, what Steve Palmer wore every shirt number from 1 to 14?
Oh, wow. So when was the last night? Oh, wait.
That was about
the Championship.
In the Championship. Well, yeah, this was in League One.
Or... Okay, this is the third tier of English football.
Yes, in old man.
Okay.
And there was only three subs back then as well. So he basically wore every possible shirt now during the course of the season, culminating with a couple of games left in the season. The player worked out that he'd done 12. And by this time, Watford were already promoted. So the following game, which I think was their last home game, manager Graham Taylor put him in goal.
That's like something out of a junior football, isn't it? Or let the goalkeeper go up front or something like that.
Yeah, I know, that was the week after. The week after, they made him number 9 and put him up front.
Wow.
But the week before, they put him in goal and gave him the number 1 shirt and then substituted him the first time the ball went. But it just seems mad that there were teams, there's a team doing this in professional 5 years ago. You're saying that a junior football, isn't it?
It is, it is. You can imagine, you can imagine an amateur Sunday morning pub team or an under 12 team doing that, couldn't you?
Palmer, I delved into the Palmer backstory, and he's got quite an amazing, unique story. So he obviously is a utility player who could play in 14 different positions. Life at Brighton, quit football, and I can think of no other footballers that have done this. He quit football to get a degree.
Oh, impressive.
Whilst at Cambridge University, he asked cricket for Cambridge University. First class cricket match, dismissed former England opener Graham Fowler, then got his 3 years, went back into football. I think he went to Notts County or maybe QPR, and then at Watford, where he did his 14, bit of a club legend at Watford, by all accounts. Now the Premier League's head of data solutions.
I kind of expect you're going to say he's now at NASA or something.
That's a hell of a life CV. I couldn't find any other examples of professional footballers that have been to Oxford.
But playing first-class cricket, because, I mean, there's been that footballer-cricket crossover before, right? Didn't Ian Botham play for Scunthorpe, famously, didn't he?
Yeah, apparently. Lifetime, all accounts are very good, but clearly he's got to be pretty good to have got a game for a league club.
Right.
Neville and Gary Lineker, who have played for like Lancashire 2s or Leicestershire 2s.
Gary Neville did?
I'm sure. Oh, it might have been Phil, actually.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember Lineker, he was one. I think he had to make that decision. Are you going football or are you going cricket? Because he was kind of good enough where he could have done either.
Clearly, it's a very Neville's. Easy choice, isn't it?
Right, yeah. I don't know. The thing about cricket, though, if you become a professional cricket player, you just travel to like places like the West Indies and Australia when it's like really warm. So, you know, I think cricket umpire would have to be the best job. You stand around in the sun. Okay, they'll pay you. They'll fly you business. They'll put you up in a nice hotel. And your job is you just have to stand in the sun for a few days.
Any decisions either, because it just gets referred to the third umpire. So actually,
right,
if you get stuff wrong, it matters, does it?
There is that. There is that.
It's a pretty easy job. You don't even have to call no more in Test cricket. Someone upstairs does that. So it's pretty easy. Yeah. Hmm. So I'm a clearly utility player, which you don't get much of anymore, do you?
That's true.
James Milner's the nearest I can think to sort of.
I was going
to
say the last big one I can think of. Phil Neville was kind of all over the shop, wasn't he?
Phil Neville, and then you've got the odd ones like Dion. He could randomly play as a striker or a centre half.
Dion Dublin plays centre back. I don't remember that.
Yeah, Dion Dublin centre back.
Fair enough.
We had a player called Mark Saunders. Famously scored against Sheffield Wednesday in the last 16 of the FA Cup. But he played in every. Apart from in goal at some point for Gillingham, he could play anywhere. We had someone, Nyron Nosworthy, when he played for us, could play in defence or up front, but it's very rare, isn't it? Like, obviously, centre backs can play at left back or whatever, but to play positions and such different positions is very unusual, isn't it?
Right, yes, indeed. Yeah, I can't think of anyone right now.
Well, you used to have Paul Warhurst, didn't you?
Yeah, though I don't really see him as being a utility player. He was just an out-and-out centre-back and a good one too. We then had a couple of strikers out injured. Trevor Francis stuck him up front and then he just became a striker. So, and then when he moved to Blackburn, I think, they played him a bit. But, you know, it was one of those, like, for me, a true utility player, it's kind of like all over the place. You know, left-back this week, is it centre midfield next week, boss? You know, like Phil Neville was, or Brian McClair is another one.
But clearly, yes. I suppose nowadays there's less need for that because of squad depth. It's not like, Kevin De Bruyne's injured. Yeah, that's been like attacking midfield. We've got no one else who can play there. Who's going to have to?
Right.
You don't really get that anymore, do you?
This is true.
Squad depth. But anyway, I don't know. I'm putting it, it's probably has the best sort of Swiss Army knife footballing career of it. Sort of 20-30 years.
Swiss Army Knife Football Group. I like that. I like that. Right. Well, Mr. Day, as I said, I'm very, very excited about this. Are you ready for the quiz? The greatest quiz we've ever done.
Oh, it's good.
Got a Gillingham link to it. Okay.
Yeah.
Are we ready?
Yeah.
So, former Gillingham and Watford striker Marlon King.
Yeah.
Has been convicted of 14 different offences. Now, unfortunately, I've only been able to get. I only know of 13. I was unable to find the 14, so we're down to 13. I'll give you a clue. Think about violence and cars, and that gives you most of your answers. Now, what I want from you is I want the 13 offences that Marlon King has been convicted of. I want the offence name. I'll obviously be generous if you get close. You know, if you say punching someone, which is true on a few occasions, that won't cut the mustard. I'm going to need the name of the crime, and I'm going to set you. Seeing you're, I think you've won already. Your way ahead. I'm going to set you par of 7. You need to get 7 in a minute. So, like I say, think violence. Think of anything to do with cars, Mr. Day. Your 1 minute starts now.
GBH.
Yes.
ABH.
Yes.
Car theft.
Yes.
Fencing.
Fencing?
Yeah, as in handling stolen goods.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Assault.
Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're on 5.
Fraud.
Fraud is there, yes. 6. I didn't get black. Oh, you got assault. There's another kind of assault as well.
Hated assault.
Nope.
Violent assault.
No.
What types of assault are there? Choked assault. No.
No, you got 5 seconds left. Think of cars.
Well, did Marlon King car theft? I don't know. Regicide. I don't know.
Regicide. I like it. A little Hail Mary at the end there.
Yeah. Was it right?
So, you got 6. I'm afraid you failed this one. You missed out on sexual assault. Speeding's a bit pathetic compared to the rest of it. Drink driving, while uninsured, criminal damage, attempting to gain property by deception, and threatening behaviour.
One of our best ever strikers.
Yeah, what can I say? It was a hell of a career for Marlon King, but not regicide yet. No, and the two clubs he played the most for. Number one was Gillingham. Number two was Watford. So there we go.
Yeah, he was. He played for Gillingham and was very good for Gillingham when we were in the championship. Mm. So. I think pound for pound, he's one of our best players. As in, like, he's one of our best players when we were our best.
Right.
He's a naughty boy.
indeed. Right. Well, Simon Day, you failed, but I feel like everyone's a winner after that quiz. Let's hear fact number 2.
Well, staying away from football. Luther Blissett, ex-Watford striker, Luther Blissett, the QAnon conspiracy theory.
Go on.
No. Luther Blissett was the name of a 90s political movement that did art pranks and media hoaxes. It started in Italy and was named after Blissett, the ex-Watford player, because apparently the people in Italy thought it was a really funny name, which I don't know. So there were loads of art pranks and media sort of stuff, sort of inventing a celebrity artist and giving him a backstory hoax, and he never existed, or putting out fake news stories about someone dying, that sort of thing. And it's all done under the name Luther Blissett. there's some great, if you wiki bomb Luther Blissett, there's some brilliant sort of phrases. Like, Luther Blissett was a conspiracy theory, that sort of nonsense. But anyway, it culminated in a fake book being written by Luther Blissett called Q. And then the theory has it that this inspired QAnon, because Q about QAnon, but basically it's some people think it's a complete the created it were inspired by Luther Blissett Q and their own thing, rather than it being some actual conspiracy theorists who really believe this nonsense. What you know about QAnon, but basically they seem to, they're this American conspiracy or hoax who seem to think that Donald Trump was put in the White House to expose a government.
Yeah, all the Pizzagate stuff and all that. Yes, that was absolute nonsense.
Was that Clinton?
So that was when Obama was there. You know, you see the emails. Well, I'll be honest, when I read it, I immediately thought drugs, because they're like, oh, have we got the pizza? And then, I know, like, pizza in inverted commas. Make sure we have enough pizza for everyone. Don't worry, we'll carve it and slice some so everyone has some. And it's just, it's really, really, like, they're clearly not talking about pizza. But then a load of people saw this and just thought, oh, it must be a child sex ring, which I found, like how, I'm not sure quite how you got to, clearly they're discussing something, but I'm not sure how you got from A to Z, but there we go.
But clearly, a lot of got tagged on to Trump, didn't they? They were big Trump supporters because he was the man.
Yes.
Expose all of this. But it's actually, considering it's absolute bullshit, it has sort of got into the mainstream a bit, hasn't it? I can remember Roseanne Barr was sort of, oh, it was Roseanne in Roseanne. She was sort of peddling it and basically, I hope, cancelled over it or whatever. Yeah, it has sort of, considering it's an absolute theory, it has sort of got a bit of traction, hasn't it?
Yeah, but I know people just, it amazes me. Like Carl Froch, Carl Froch's brother is really big into Flat Earth Society, and Carl Froch has got into that a bit as well. And like, it just amazes me how people can just suddenly get, yeah, you know what, maybe it is flat. Maybe, you know, like, maybe everything's been a lie up until now.
Do you want a celebrity flat earther?
Go on.
Andrew Tough.
No. I'm disappointed because I like Flintoff a lot. He's a really
Andrew
good guy. That's ruined my evening.
There's interviews with Andrew Flintoff where he's going, well, I can't now. I thought about this and it can't be. And it can't be round. It can't be round. It's got to be flat. There's got to be something in that. Yeah, multiple sources.
That really has ruined my life. Night rather. Not ruined my life. That'd be a bit over the top.
What, because you believe that the Earth's flat? But as far as I'm aware, he's the only celebrity flat earther of sort of this millennium.
Right. I mean, like I say, Carl Froch has hinted at it. Carl Froch, he also quite often likes EDL posts, but there we go. That's another thing.
Yeah, he's, I don't know what football club he would be, but probably Juventus circa 2000.
Why Juventus circa 2006?
Because it's quite scummy and horrible. Didn't like.
Were
it.
They?
Well, that was around the when they got demoted, wasn't it? When they were sort of
of course.
Legendary club, but then we got put through the mire. And I feel like Frock's a bit like that, isn't he? He's clearly a very good fighter, but now he's like, I find him unbearable to be.
He's got that really. I think Floyd Mayweather used to have this as well, and the reason why I think people like more old Mayweather and Froch now are so unbearable is they've got that kind of unbelievable arrogance, but with no charisma. And it's, you know, because when you get people like Conor McGregor, Muhammad Ali. People who kind of are clearly quite clever and quick-witted. Okay, I get why a lot of people hated Ali and hate McGregor, but you know they can be funny. They've got some good moments. But when you've got Carl Froch sitting there, like, there's never been a better British fighter than me. I'm an international superstar, like in monotone with like absolutely zero personality. I just find that really hard to take.
Yeah. Falls into the category, and there's plenty of people like this in football who like they get the TV, because they're a big name, whatever, but they don't tell me anything that I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't mind big names getting punditry gigs, that's fine. Gary Neville's very good. There's a host of ex cricketers, brilliant. And there's very good ones in boxing as well, aren't there? None spring to mind at the moment, but
Paulie Malignaggi,
Yes, he's very good. Yes, good call. Good call. I'm all right with Tony Bellew, to be honest. When he's on there, I think he's all right. Carl Falk just doesn't tell me anything I don't know. And I know very little about boxing.
He's also so bad at scoring boxing fights. I mean, I actually have to... I do score boxing fights for a website under a pseudonym, so you won't find me online. But
is it Ian John Lewis?
No, I'm not that bad. And so I'm pretty good. I've scored hundreds of fights. I'm either with the judges or I'm with the masses. You know, when I look at the cards, I think I've only once or twice had cards that have been kind of off from everybody else. Anyway, I will say I don't think I've ever given a 10-10 round. Carl Froch gives one or two 10-10s in almost every fight. He doesn't seem to understand that the 10-point must system, it's like you must give 10 points to one and nine to the other. Like 10-10 only happens like once in a blue moon where, I don't know, it just, yeah. But anyway, he doesn't quite understand how to score boxing either. There we go.
I think it should be like at the Olympics where you know the score off.
Yeah, although the counter argument to that is, isn't it? You know, I'd like to see it done on mass. They've done a couple of fights. There was a Canelo Alvarez fight about 10 years back where they did that. But the counter argument for that is, you know, you're coasting to victory. You're seven rounds up. You're just going to run for the last five rounds. It's going to kill off the fight. Mm. So there is that argument to it. But
anyway, okay.
Right. So fact number two. What was it again?
Luther Blissett and QAnon.
Yes, okay. Luther Blissett.
We didn't mention Watford at point.
For those of you listening, Luther Blissett used to play for Watford. There we go. Okay, so Luther Blissett raided the White House last year or 2 years ago. Right, okay. That takes us on to Bizarre Fan. You know what? We've got some really good choices here. I think if he hadn't been the chairman, Elton John would have been a great shout. Because, I mean, Elton John being a passion... But because he was obviously the chairman, he's so close to it, so it's not bizarre enough. Anthony Joshua is the biggest name they've got. But again, I don't really find that bizarre. I'm going to go with a Watford local who has been pictured wearing the kit a few times. And that is Ginger Spice Jerry Halliwell. So she, a big name. There's a big. And when I was researching this, sorry to interrupt. When I was researching this, I found out, you know what? I was always saying about how nobody was ever going to come close to Arsenal and Osama bin Laden. Well, it turns out that Arsenal actually have another fan who pushes Osama bin Laden for the most bizarre fan title. Apparently, Fidel Castro was a huge Arsenal fan.
Really? That is good. Yeah. Not quite on a par with Osama, but yeah, that's up there, definitely.
It is a good one. But anyway, back to Jerry Halliwell. There you go, Watford lass. So
weirdly, I feel like that because she's from Watford, isn't she?
Who do the other Spice Girls support then? Well, they were all pictured mid Spice Girl era wearing their favourite team's kit. Go on, team get all five.
Liverpool.
Yep.
Banter. Oh, talking about. I turned on. but we were watching something on Netflix. It finished. The TV came on. She was presenting that concert on ITV last night. Honestly, the worst piece of presenting I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
Absolutely abysmal. Like, I felt sorry for her. Really, really.
She should have stuck to lip syncing.
She should have done. And supporting Manchester United.
No, because possibly, but you know what? There was another Manchester United fan in the group, so
Mel, wouldn't it? That'd be Mel B.
Oh, no, come on.
Is that Beckham? Just
Posh Spice, yes. So we got Sporty was Liverpool, Posh Spice was Man U, Ginger. So what have we got? We've got Mel B and Bunton to go.
Bunton support.
Bunton Spurs.
Okay, yeah.
And Mel B.
I think I might have seen this photo shoot. And
Mel B, where's she from?
I thought she was from Manchester, but I ain't got a clue, to be honest now.
Leeds.
Right.
I'm assuming she's from Leeds. She's a Leeds fan anyway. It seems like she probably would be there. But
she does sound a bit like that. I do. Jerry Halliwell married or in a relationship with one of the high ups in F1, isn't she?
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she's like, not the one who died, not the one who's got a sex dungeon. Another one. Red Bull, whatever he's called.
Oh, not it's Horner.
Horner, that's it, Christian Horner. Yes.
Right. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm sure they're a couple.
Okay, interesting. That's a bizarre.
That's bizarre celebrity couples. That's
and you said about the one who died. Yeah, I didn't realise Max Mosley shot himself last year until I read about it in the on BBC. Max Mosley shot himself last year. Like, terminal, I didn't even know he died. But
yeah, he had a terminal diagnosis, didn't he, for the brain cancer or something?
Max Mosley did not do things by halves, did he? I mean,
no. No.
Got terminal cancer. Okay, shoot myself in the head. Other classics, of course, include a Nazi-themed orgy with prostitutes. I mean, he's a man who didn't go into life half-hearted.
No. Was he the sex dungeon one? There was someone high up in Formula One who was some kind of sex dungeon scandal.
Yeah. All that, yeah. Dressed
was that
up
him as well? Was that him
yeah,
as well?
He'd dress up as Nazis, sex dungeons, the whole shebang. Yeah.
Him
and you know what? And when it came out, because I think they were trying to blackmail him or anything, and he just came out with it. No, these are all me. These are my photos. Just absolutely owned it. Like, no, I'm not. I'm not allowing people to do this to me. No, I'm proud. Everybody's got their kinks. This is me. This is Max Mosley. Take it or leave it. I think most people probably left it. To be fair, Max, but there we go.
Maybe not the first celebrity I think of when I think of sex dungeons.
I hope Joseph Fritzl, or you're not counting as a celebrity.
No. Jamie Theakston.
What?
There's a Jamie scandal, I'm sure.
No.
I'm sure there was.
And I believe you.
Ex-BBC Breakfast presenter Frank Boff in the 80s.
I'm not even sure who Frank Boff is, but Jamie Theakston had a sex... when you say, was it just a basement with a bed? Like, I feel...
yeah. I'll be honest, I don't really know what a sex dungeon is. Or what's a dungeon? Actually, it's just a basement.
That's a good...
dungeon? Is it the basement of a castle?
I just typed in Jamie Theakston sex dungeon into Google and I got Jamie had sex with three hookers in torture chamber brothel. So that's the...
I think that backs me up, doesn't it?
Well, so I think he visited a dungeon. I don't think he actually owned one by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So I think you owe Jamie Theakston an apology, Simon.
I want to see his right history before.
Fair enough.
Right, should we move away from brothels?
Bizarre fans and dungeons. And fact number three.
Graham Taylor took Watford from 92nd in the Football League to first in a 5-year.
That's a hell of a stat. Wow.
Yeah, 1977 to 1980.
Wow.
They were bottom of a bit, albeit very early.
Mm.
Bottom of what was Division 4 is now League 2. 5 years later, they got top of the Division 1, and now the Premier League. They actually finished runners up that cup final the season after.
Wow.
Now, I'm looking at the league table just before this. So currently Scunthorpe for 10 points to League 2. Now, I appreciate we're quite late on in the season here, but I even in their wildest dreams, Scunthorpe think they're going to be top of the Premier League in 2027.
No.
That is something that's just never going to happen again, is it? And clearly Watford, they spent a few quid, but it wasn't like the Saudi ticked in and got them to the top of the Premier League. It was largely the work of Taylor.
Something that never happened again. I don't know, you never know what's around the corner. You know, I would say, you know, a lot of us, we get all kind of like apocalyptic about, you know, the money in football, but you know, you look what's happened in the Spanish league where they kind of they actually started cracking down on Barcelona and Real Madrid, just like taking out, like, I don't know, £5 billion loans or whatever they have, you know. And okay, so it's evened it up a bit this season, but not much. But
Real Madrid are only 10 points clear this season.
Yeah, well, okay, Barcelona dropped out a few places, but you know, yeah. You never know what's around. I mean, I'm not hopeful, but you know, you never know. 30 years from now, there's a wage cap, or you never know. You never know.
This actually coincided with Elton John taking over at the club.
Okay.
That was his first appointment.
Fair play to him.
Hence why Elton loved at Watford, because he was responsible for their best ever.
Right. Graham Taylor, for me, was a classic example of a manager. He did really well in 80s English football, where you could get away with long ball and kind of like minimal tactical knowledge. And I then remember, obviously, he did terribly at England. And then after that, because, again, playing against international teams who actually understood tactics. Because, I mean, English football in the 80s and the early 90s was way behind. Well, sorry, late 80s, early 90s was kind of way behind the European game, right?
Yeah.
And then, because I remember Taylor, he then went to Watford, got them from, and, you know, did pretty well in the lower divisions.
Yes.
And then Villa appointed him. And I remember thinking, times have changed. There's no way Graham Taylor will work now. And he was absolutely abysmal at Aston Villa, wasn't he? Because at that point, all of a sudden, foreign players had entered the game. Foreign managers had entered the game, actually brought in tactical knowledge, which was lacking before. And Graham Taylor just couldn't handle that, could he?
Well, no, he was very much sort of from the Keegan sort of school. There's a lot of, certainly during that 77-82 period, a lot of high-scoring games. Well, you score four, we'll score five, sort of
right.
But translating to international football, where teams, like you said, teams are more tactically savvy, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame that Taylor was manager for 4 years at England. And I was trying to sort of jot things that happened during Taylor's tenure. And without fail, they're all negative. I can't think of a single good thing that happened when Graham Taylor was England manager.
No.
Like, obviously, do I not like that? The San Marino game where they scored after like 7 seconds. And having off Lineker, losing to a USA, Ronald Koeman.
Refusing to pick Chris Waddle and for that last game, especially so that game against Holland, and then playing Carlton Palmer out of position at right midfield was another classic move. As was Chris Woods being so bad in the 93-94 season that he got dropped from the Wednesday team and Graham Taylor was still picking him for England.
just that might be Harry Maguire soon, to be fair.
Yeah, indeed.
we're recording this the day after Harry Maguire got booed by England, which is a bit of a non-story. But I do find it odd that sort of clearly, as far as I'm aware, Harry Maguire's been pretty good for England, hasn't he, over the years?
I'm not sure. I don't watch enough England matches, I'm afraid.
He plays every important game, and England have been very good in terms of getting through competitions in recent years. Supporting the national team, surely how well he's doing for his club's neither here nor there, is it?
Yes, but he's become a bit of a meme because he has had some comedy errors where he like tries to kick the ball and falls out. You know, there have been quite a few of those. It's become a bit of a meme. I don't know if people just spent too long on TikTok and they've kind of let that Harry Maguire, he'll just fall over, you know, because they've seen a couple of funny bits. I don't know if that's kind of crept over into real life.
Look, hasn't he?
Yeah, he does. He looks like a classic Brexit footballer, doesn't he? You know, well, like Sean Dyche is the most Brexit man in football, isn't he? He's a
analogy I've heard for Harry Maguire's look is he looks like someone from university who would wear a rugby shirt.
I like that, and also the story.
I like that, yeah.
The story he came up with the Greek police was. Yeah. I mean, any time a British person gets in trouble abroad, they always go into the, you can't trust the police of country X. They're just not, they're always up to no good. And Harry Maguire's story, you know, things like, I was frightened for my family. I thought these people were kidnapping them. And then what was it like, you know, also in the story where he said, Yeah, so I just left my family and went up to the road to make a phone call. Like, wait a second. Which one is it, Harry? Because I don't think you could have both. I don't think you were frightened your wife was about to get kidnapped and you left her alone with the kidnappers and went off to make a phone call for 5 minutes. Well, you know, pick a lane, Harry, and stay in it.
I always think that this idea that the police in foreign countries are like Neanderthals or whatever is just because they speak a different language. Right. You know what I mean? What are you going on about?
Right.
And like, yeah, clearly, I mean, I don't know what happened. Is it going anywhere, that story? That was ages ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It died a death, didn't it?
What were we talking about? Graham Taylor.
Yes.
Well, around that time, when Graham Taylor, do you remember the England player who got booed regularly?
John Barnes,
yeah. Because John Barnes was kind of the opposite of Harry. He was like really good for his club, but never really, apart from that goal against Brazil, really do it for England. He was,
but he got something ridiculous like 80, 90 caps, didn't he? Despite the fact that maybe 70 plus, but despite the fact, like you say, he must have had what, 5 good games maximum. But because, and again, I shouldn't be getting booed, but at the same time, it was very silly of the managers to keep picking him when clearly he just wasn't doing it at international level, you know.
It's... And Chris Waddle could have done.
Chris Waddle, I think his international career, you know, he didn't get picked when he was at Wednesday because Graham Taylor was obviously an idiot. Chris Waddle, I think I don't think he did as well internationally as he did at club level, but he still had some, you know, he had more good games than Barnes, put it that way.
Yeah. So there you go. So Graham Taylor, brilliant lower league club manager, took Watford all the way from bottom to top, but not very good for England.
No, not so. Right, well, Mr. Day, what are we thinking? At the moment, Manchester United are the most interesting club. I mean, does Jerry Halliwell beat Kim Jong-un? Does Marlon King's sexual assaults beat George Best's sexual assaults? I don't know, like, who's... How do we rate them?
I feel like Watford have outperformed expectations. I thought they've punched above their weight. Did so? I'd probably give them a top 10 place.
Top 10? I'm thinking top 3.
Top 3? Do you think? Okay,
this has been good. I think it's been a good episode. I think we've had some good facts. I think
yeah. We haven't really
I mean, wearing
Watford.
Every shirt number, a player being put in goal for a laugh for a minute
That's
in
mad.
Professional
it's
football
expecting...
is outrageous. Yeah. Graham Taylor, again, that fact, 92nd to first in 5 years, which people talk about the rise of Wimbledon. I mean, that kind of defecates all over that, doesn't it? Blows out of the water would have been slightly better phrase. But yeah, I know. Yeah, for me, I think Watford generally did challenge for the title. You're obviously saying no, so I'm gonna put them in the Champions League then. But so Manchester United, sadly, are still the most interesting club in English football.
But we've got two teams left to beat them.
Yeah, West Ham, we've got an excellent celebrity, bizarre fan for that. Sorry, not celebrity, bizarre fan. And West Ham and...
Wolves.
Wolves, okay. Oh, Wolves. I don't know, a lot of history back in the 50s and before, but yeah, we'll see. I'm sure we've got some Steve Ball facts in there as well.
There'll be Steve Ball. And Wolves are actually my local Premier League club.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, indeed. Well, Mr. Day, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. And we'll see you all next week, or you can hear us all next week for West Ham. Bye-bye, everyone.